It's an interesting time, there's no question. These games feel... Well, they don't feel like bowl games when Charles Davis was playing. Let's bring Charles in now, former Vol, who's risen to the top of his profession. We're very proud of him, whether you're watching an NFL game or a major college game. January 6th, Friday Night Fever, Arkansas, Kansas State. Charles, welcome to the program, man. We're proud of you. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, and thank you very much. It's awfully kind of you to say Happy New Year to you and everyone else out there in the great Vol Nation.
I just love the way you represent the school. I appreciate the class act that you are, both away from the mic and also on the mic, and you're to be commended for the success you've had. And truth be known, Charles, if you wanted to go the administrator route early in your career, you had an opportunity there at Stanford. I know you did a couple other things as well. You could easily be at the top of that profession if you wanted to do that right now. What made you decide to choose to shift tracks, Charles?
Oh, that's a great question, and thanks. You really are awfully kind. There's no telling what would have happened. I thought I wanted to be an athletic director coming out of college. I thought that was the track I wanted to be on, and actually went in that direction. So, following that path, you know, I did an internship at the Southeastern Conference office. I worked for the United States Olympic Committee. Worked at Stanford, as you mentioned, as an assistant AD, and thought, hey, this is the spot, and had a goal to get back to an SEC school to be an AD. Truth be told, obviously, I would have loved that, been my alma mater. Who knows? But then I got an opportunity to go into broadcasting, and for whatever reason, it just kept going, and more opportunities kept coming my way, and I enjoyed it, and it's a good lifestyle and a fun thing to do to keep me connected with the game and with sports, and it's just worked out that way. And now I think it'd be hard to shift gears again and come back. The AD job as it was when I was coming out of school versus where it is now and how it's viewed and conducted, is it the same that I grew up seeing or I went through college seeing and wanting to be? It's a whole different skill set. And I'll just say, I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, it's not a skill set that I couldn't perform. I have no doubt of that whatsoever. But it's just a different deal. I think it's a lot tougher for athletic directors now than it's ever been because of they're actually asking you to wear many more hats. And in an economically challenged time for all of us, continue to try and raise money. That's not easily done.
You know, Charles, 5, 6, 7 years, if Tennessee came a knocking, would you listen?
Of course. You know, it was interesting, and I think you probably heard the same things I did. I heard some very flattering things about people saying, boy, it should be nice if he would consider coming back, et cetera. And, you know, that was never anything that came from my camp. I just said the same thing every time. I'm very happy in what I do. I love what I do. My family seems to enjoy, you know, what I do and seems to work for us. But when Mama calls, as Bear Bryant used to say, if Mama did call, you're going to listen to Mama. But Mama never called. It was never in the cards. It was never a mindset from the current administration. They had other things in mind, and they landed a very good man in Dave Hart to run our athletic department. I just hope that Dave Hart, and I would say this to him if I were standing in front of him, that Dave Hart understands and immerses himself in the good Tennessee culture to understand what we're about and who we're about, and I have no doubts that he will do that. But let's make sure we keep what makes us special at Tennessee going at Tennessee, too. Just because we've hit a rough patch doesn't mean our way has always been the wrong way. Our way has been pretty darn good, and our people have been pretty strong in who they are and knowing who we are as a university and as a fan base and as volunteers, because every one of us who's involved and cares about that place, whether they attend it or not, and cares about our sports teams or the university as a whole, they're volunteers. They're part of Big Orange Country, and just make sure that we have that. You know, when I look around and I wake up in the morning and I miss Haywood Harris, who's passed on, you know, I want to make sure that we take care of Gus over there, you know. Bud Ford's going to retire. That's a very sad thing for me, and I hear that his position, about the emeritus position, is not going to be there, and I'm sure they have good reasons for them, but that makes me very sad, and it makes me scared, frankly. We need those guys. We need those women. We need those people who have been around and know Tennessee and know what makes us tick. We need them to be a part of who we are. And I would send that message out to anyone who's in charge over there, if they were willing to listen. Make sure you don't miss that part too, while we continue to advance, because I know they're trying to do that for us too.
You know, that's so well put, because, I mean, let's face it, every school, every situation has what makes it unique. You know, you have the history, you have the traditions, you have the culture. Here you have such a great amalgamation of those things. You have such a great mix. And so when I look at the football program, for instance, right now, I think bringing Jay Graham back was a great move. And I'd like to see, now that we have some more openings on the assistant staff, I'd like to see them try to get a little more Tennessee flavor. Because when you get away from that, I think, in a sense, Charles, you get away from what makes it special. You need guys that understand it, I think. And it's more than just a business proposition to them. And I'm not knocking the guys that were here, because I think Wilcox and Sermon, those guys worked hard. There's no doubt about that. I'm talking about, though, just that little extra digging deep when you're out on the road and you got to see that one last prospect, or you're on the practice field and you've got a couple drills to run, or just whatever it is. There's just something unique and special about this place, Charles, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And I think that if, you know, it's one of those things that for all of us that are involved and all of us that care, and I would imagine that's anyone who's hearing our voices right now, Tony, that if you were to take what you just said and insert, you know, whatever school or organization that people care about elsewhere, you know, let's say we're having this conversation in Tuscaloosa, right? Or we're having this conversation in Columbus, Ohio. Or we're having this conversation in, you know, pick a spot, right? Eugene, Oregon. That's what we're talking about at every place. Every place has its uniqueness. Every place has what makes it what it is. You know, where you just know. I mean, there's certain things you just know where you are. I mean, you can't always describe it. You can't always say, put your finger down and say, that's what it is. You wake up and you know it. You feel it. People sense it. It's around you. It's a part of you. That's what it's like. And sure, that would be wonderful. Now, any organization that only feeds on itself runs the risk of never expanding, right, and moving forward. Because we could very easily have stopped ourselves when General Neyland was gone and said, that's the way the general did it. That's where we're always going to do it. And we wouldn't be talking now about later day success, because you have to continue to recreate yourself. You have to continue to push envelopes. You have to continue to explore new things. That's why you don't want just strictly Tennessee people. And what I mean by that is, obviously, played there, coached there, went to school there, you know, that sort of thing. Don't know anything else but Tennessee. That's not a good thing either. You want to have a healthy mix. Would it be great to have some former Vols who coach come back? I would love it. I would absolutely love it. I'd dance in the streets. The hard part right now is, and this is going to be Coach Dooley's task, and it's a very difficult one, is that loss last loss to Kentucky, I think accelerated the time clock there. Because I thought the time clock was going to give it, it was really on a 2-year cycle, Tony, 2 more years before we were looking at, you know, potentially being back in a spot where we would compete for the SEC East. That loss to Kentucky changed patience. And it changed the view. And I think it eliminated a year from that time clock. Fair or unfair, I think it did that. And that's the hard part, because now you're searching for coaches and people to come to a situation where they are, and believe me, as you know this, Tony, they're extremely savvy out there. Okay? What's the situation? I've had 4 or 5 guys call me off the grid who have jobs, pro and college, interested in Tennessee, wanting to know, what's the situation there? How much time do they really have? I'm hearing if it's a win or else next year. I told them I can't speak for any of that. They're going to have to talk to the people who are closer to the program. But would I think that they were right to ask the questions? Yes, I'd have to say yes, unfortunately. Right. You know, and let's face it, every situation that looks secure, you and I both know you're one bad season from not being secure. So I'm not saying that, like, we are a unique situation right now. But Coach Dooley's job got tougher with that loss to Kentucky. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I think that, you know, seeing what I just saw with Justin Wilcox and Peter Sermon making a move to Washington, is that a good move for them? In a lot of ways, yes, because West Coast, blah, 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 all that other stuff. But I don't think for a second that they didn't also have an eye on, well, I don't know how good things are going to be here next year. I really, you know, I think it'd be disingenuous and naive for us not to look at it that way and not to note that. Not trying to be a negative guy. I hope you understand that. That's not where I'm coming from. This is a guy who's concerned about his school and about his program. So we've got work to do. Coach Dooley obviously knows he's got work to do. I stand firmly behind him and support him in every way possible. I just hope that we can get that done quicker rather than not, because I think the patience of our fan base, we've stretched it. Let's just be honest about it. So many changes, the losses, this, that, and everything. And that Kentucky game, I think, really, really took it out of a lot of people.
You know, I think you're right, and here's the big, to me, when you start talking about this situation, the major hurdle Dooley has now is he has openings on his staff, and you want to find quality guys. And Tennessee has the money to pay quality guys, but so does everybody else right now. The money is flowing like never before.
It's everywhere.
And it's crazy, and it's out of control, really. But that said, Dooley now is in a situation where, and Dave Hart, if somebody's going to come, Charles, for instance, they're talking with Kevin Steele over at Clemson right now, mm-hmm. or Dooley is, okay? And let's say Kevin Steele really gets serious about this. Why in the world would Kevin Steele leave that situation where you win 8 or 9 games a year there, they throw parades for you, and they have all the money, they have all the money to pay you that we're going to pay you. For this deal, the only way I come here is if you do what they did for Jay Graham, which is 4 guaranteed years, no matter who the coach is. But then if you're the AD here, you're starting to put together that next staff. You can't do that too much. So these guys, that Kentucky game, Charles, really threw them into, if you had that AD hat on right now, it would be a real quandary to sit where both those guys sit right now. That's the reality of what we're looking at here in Rocky Top right now, don't you think?
Oh, without a doubt. The Kentucky game was a major, major hit in so many different ways. You know, forget that, you know, it's been since 84. You know, my gallows humor when I saw the score, I was in airport in Oklahoma City. I just left an Oklahoma game that I'd worked that day and saw the score and, you know, obviously got razzed by my crew. And they were like, when's the last time that happened? And I said, I was on the last Tennessee team to lose to Kentucky in 1984, which was a distinction that, you know, you didn't want to have.
Right, that's right.
So my gallows humor was, well, at least I don't have that anymore. I didn't play on the last Tennessee team to lose to Kentucky. But I would rather be on the last team to lose to Kentucky. But it wasn't just Kentucky. It was everything that went into and around the loss. A wide receiver playing quarterback.
Yeah.
Not an option attack, and they throw less than 10 times.
Right.
In modern day football and win.
Right.
You know, you can go on and on with the different things and all the turmoil that came out of that. And frankly, Tony, some of that I think got overplayed, and the reason I say that is you're going to have seniors, and those seniors play for how many different head coaches?
3. No question.
So how many different position coaches those guys go through? Trust was going to be an issue for them no matter who the head coach was. I mean, that was going to be difficult. I mean, you're asking a lot of those kids that every person walks through the door, automatic immediate trust. It just doesn't work that way. And so when they're talking about disconnect between them and the younger kids, that's a natural deal based on what Tennessee's been through in recent years. Coach Dooley now has the opportunity to calm the waters on that if he's able to stay for a while, because now you don't have the disconnect anymore. Everybody's doing the same thing, talking the same language, on the same page, all the cliches I can run in one sentence. So that's where it goes, but I think for our fan base, for Big Orange Nation, for Big Orange Country, for the most beautiful people in the world, it's tough because they've done a heck of a job staying fairly patient throughout this, throwing their support to these coaches when they come in, and we got off to a pretty decent, promising start, and things looked better when we started. I thought it was a little overblown about when we went to Florida. Hey, we can go beat Florida and all that, you know, and heck, I felt the optimism too, but I said, guys, this is still a tall task. This is still not, you know, something that's just flat out realistic, you know, but you look back, shoot, that Cincinnati team we beat was a pretty good football team. You know, when you look back on it, you didn't, you know, at the time you're like, well, we beat Cincinnati. well, that's a pretty good team that may still be the best team in the Big East, even though they're not going to the big, you know, the BCS game. Competitive in a lot of games, but couldn't get over the hump. But, you know, I felt like almost like a halfway competitive game every time. Get through halftime and then things didn't go right or whatever. But you can see that they've done a good job trying to get there. I like the mindset. I like that. The Kentucky game just threw all that off. You know, it's just because nothing looked right. Nothing felt good. And I think that's the hard part for not just the staff and the players who feel it more than anyone. And let us never forget that part. No one hurts more than the people who are closest involved, that staff and those players who are involved. We all hurt, but we didn't go through everything to get there and go out on the field and play. Let us never forget that part of it. But it did stretch our patience of an unbelievably loyal and terrific fan base, because they're like, so what's next? How do we get better? And they're tired of hearing, you know, this kid's unhappy, this kid wants to transfer, you know, I hear this about this guy, and I hear that about that guy. Well, trust me, that staff's trying to get all that stuff straightened out. They're trying to get it done. But winning is what usually cures everything else. You know, the difference between those 12-0 locker rooms and those 6-6 locker rooms, where you hear more discontent out of 6-6, are those additional 6 wins. Because don't think for a second that kid who's playing second string on a 12-0 team's happy either. He has no room to go anywhere and no room to talk because your team's winning. What are you going to say? That's the issue. It's when you're 6-6, and that's when everything bubbles up. Well, he didn't get it done. Why not me? And off you go.
You know, one of those teams that sort of jumped into Tennessee's orb in recent years, I think, is Arkansas. You know, you look around this league and you say, well, who's picked up the slack? Arkansas's keeping a lot of kids home.
Yep.
They've got a lot of dynamic football players on offense. They made a wonderful hire in pulling a guy out of the pros who truly did it and who truly got it done up at Louisville. I mean, the guy absolutely knows what he's doing at this level. When you look at them as you prepare for this week, what do you see in Arkansas in terms of their future, in terms of what he's been able to do there?
Yeah, I see a lot of what you've already described, and I see a future that stays bright for Arkansas. Look, we all know what their biggest challenge is now. It's dealing with Alabama, LSU, Auburn. Okay? So, it's like this season, I think we could probably make a case, all right, that you can make a case that when all these bowl games are over, let's say Arkansas wins their bowl game against Kansas State and goes 11-2. All right, Tony, work with me here real quick, all right? I think that when it's all said and done, Alabama, LSU, however that game finishes, you can still make a case that the loser's number 2 in the country. You really can. I mean, it's hard to beat it. I know Oklahoma State has jumped in there now because they won their bowl game. But if people really thought Oklahoma State was the best team, they would have put them in ahead of Alabama. I think most people still believe Alabama's better than Oklahoma State. So just, you know, this is that little hypothetical stuff. And, you know, the voting won't come down this way. But you could make a strong case that if Alabama and Oklahoma State played, Alabama would be a favorite. And if LSU and Oklahoma State played, the same thing. Well, Arkansas, to me, could be the third best team in the country. First, the only losses are to the top 2 teams in the country. They could easily make that case. They won't get that opportunity, but they could make that case. Now, go back to last year when it looked like that was a high water mark with Mallett, and they go to a BCS and all the Ohio State shenanigans, and they didn't play well early, but they came with a rush and almost won the game. Now you're starting over with a quarterback who played a little bit last year, had some success, but you don't really know. What's Tyler Wilson going to do? God, he's only put up another 3,000-yard season. Kid's been phenomenal. You think kids don't want to play in that offense and throw it and catch it? They do. And that's where things are going to continue to go well for them. I think that staff stability is pretty good there. His brother came back to be his OC when he lost a guy at Garrick McGee to be a head coach. He made a change on defense, decided he wanted a new defense coordinator, brought in Paul Haynes from Ohio State. This is his first coordinating job, so we'll find out a lot about him as time goes on. But you like the pedigree that he brings in. And he doesn't have to be super improved on defense. They just have to be a little improved on defense because the offense is going to remain a constant there. And you're right, Bobby Petrino on the college level, as good as you're going to find out there. He wasn't a pro coach, it's not his personality. He learned that about himself. Don't worry. If anybody ever hears another dalliance with the pros, just discount it. Because that means either someone's off their meds or it's just a bad rumor. Because there's no way he's doing that again.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Patino,
no, there's not a thing. There's not a thing wrong with it. Tony, it's a siren song. I work NFL, I work college. The pros always will be the siren song. When you've hit darn near the top of your profession on one, there's that itch to find out how you would do and take your stuff and work it at the top level. Listen, I've seen Chip Kelly work at Oregon now for a couple of years.
Yep.
Something burns in me to see if Chip Kelly could take the way he coaches and his style of offense and fortify a roster and try it that way in the NFL and see if that wouldn't change the game. I'd love to see the try. The hard part is you're talking about like with Denver, the way they're running offense with Tebow now.
Yep.
If he goes down in that playoff game early, you got to switch back to another style of football because Brady Quinn's not running the zone read.
Right.
Or an option game, you see? So if you're going to do it and you have an owner that says, let's go all in, that means your quarterback behind Tebow has to be a Tebow-similar quarterback to continue the system to run, right? Think about all the other systems that are running the NFL. The guy behind the guy can run the same system. That's the point. In Denver, they've kind of gone in with Tebow. And if something happens to him, and I know it looks like it never will because, you know, the guy's built unbelievably well, but let's face it, everyone gets hurt in that league. If he goes down, Brady, okay, we got to go back the way we used to do it. You haven't practiced it. You haven't done it. That's why what I'm saying with like a Chip Kelly, if you were to hire him and say, you know something, and the ownership is going to say, we're all in and run your stuff the way you want to run it, it'd be interesting to see if there would be a change in philosophy and recognition in the NFL. It just would be interesting to see. But the problem is, with those case studies, that's a lot of money people are investing, and they don't want to do that.
No, that's exactly right. And we've already had a case study up there at up in Washington with Spurrier and his offense, and it didn't go too well. And we've seen with the Redskins.
But you know, Tony, you know what I would argue on that one?
Go ahead.
You know why
it
didn't go very well to me?
What's that?
They weren't very good.
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to run that with Shane Matthews and Danny Wolfe.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, if you look around now, what if he had Aaron Rodgers?
I bet you Dooley could win with Aaron Rodgers.
Listen, everybody can win with Aaron Rodgers. That's why you get Aaron Rodgers. But that's why you get Drew Brees. That's why you get Phillip Rivers. See, if you don't have that trigger guy, that's why you have Peyton. That's what does it. That changes everything. Now, you got to put pieces with them to make it work. They can't do it alone.
Right.
They give you a much better opportunity. See, you know, my argument with Coach Spurrier was always simply, he brought in so many ex-Gators who weren't that good that it became an issue.
That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, you've got Werfel, you've got Shane Matthews, Chris Doering, who I absolutely love. But Chris Doering was a guy was trying to make an NFL roster. He wasn't a guy that should be a frontline guy. See, so that becomes the issue for you. Spurrier running offense in the NFL is fine to me if he has the right people to run it. I didn't think he had the right people to run it, and I didn't think he had the right mindset in terms of that. I felt like he thought he was such a darn good coach, I can do this with my guys, and we'll go show you. Wrong. You better go get some people who can play. Because that league is an unforgiving league, to put it mildly. And he found out. So his personality works better in college, because guess what? He can take the guys he wants, and in college, the gap isn't the same. Look, Hal Mumme left Kentucky, and for a lot of reasons, he was supposed to be gone from Kentucky, but for a while there, he had it going pretty well. And I'll never forget one of my favorite quotes of his. Hal, why do you punt the ball out of bounds? Why do you punt it away from people? Why don't you have guys cover? He said, because in the SEC, that guy returning the punt has NFL written all over him. The guys I have covering the punt have CPA written all over them. And see, and that's the difference between college and the NFL. Because in the NFL, every guy out there is an NFL guy. In college, there are a lot more guys that are me as opposed to NFL guys. So you can out-coach people and out-scheme them with guys who aren't quite as talented because the talent gap isn't as big. In other words, most of the guys are playing with their peers, save the few NFL guys on their roster. See, there's your difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question. And Harvey has a question for you about Friday. Go ahead, Harvey.
The Kansas State-Arkansas game seems like a death wish to me for Kansas State because their two losses were to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
And Arkansas is basically a mirror image of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. You're a DB. What does Kansas State have to do differently to be able to stop that kind of offense?
Well, first, they need better athletes.
Well,
first of all, and those guys aren't out there for this game, so you know, take my trite answer and throw it out the window. Here's the thing. Two things happened that were different between the Oklahoma State loss for Kansas State. Number one, they couldn't keep up offensively. So once Oklahoma shut them down and they started going three and outs and the ball went over, you know, lost possessions, empty possessions, whether it's football, basketball, kill you in the way the game's played nowadays, because Landry Jones threw for 505 yards in that game, quarterback for Oklahoma. But Kansas State didn't keep track, couldn't keep pace, so the game got away and the score got big. What was it, 58-17 final? Now you flip it, the very next week, they went to Oklahoma State, and I thought, there is no way they're keeping pace with Oklahoma State. I thought Oklahoma State would kill them. It's a 48-42 game, with a chance to, with Kansas State with the ball, with a chance late. They were able to control the game running it, and Colin Klein threw it well enough that day. I think he ran for 144 and three touchdowns as their running quarterback. I think he threw for 231. But they didn't turn it over, and they scored. And that's how they stayed in the game. So when it looks what looks like a track meet that's all in favor of Arkansas, Harvey, I just caution anyone who has not seen Kansas State play this year, don't just automatically leap there, because – yeah, by definition and by paper, yeah, it looks like Arkansas's got control of this thing. But I want to see Arkansas handle what's going to come at them offensively, which is a heavy dose of their quarterback, Colin Klein. And his running game is a lot Tebow-esque. A lot of power runs, a lot of read options, a little bit of down-the-line option, but not much. And what happens now is you got to focus on him, and he's not a great thrower. Matter of fact, when you watch him throw, you're like, ugh. But because of the running game, the throwing lane's open, so he doesn't have to be a great thrower. He's going to have better windows to throw into, and that's what happens with them all year. Look, I did their game against Texas, Harvey, and they had 121 yards in total offense. But they picked off two passes from Texas. They held them late. And they won the game like 17-12 or something, just an ugly, nasty game. Texas at one point had all the momentum, and a guy breaks free for a big run, and the D-back comes from the other side of the field and tackles him, and Texas settles for a field goal. That's how Kansas State beats you. They don't let you have anything easy. You know, they make it very difficult. Is the defense a great defense? No. But they've improved against the run by over 100 yards from last year to this year. They do enough on defense to screw with you. Now, can they keep up with Arkansas? We'll find out defensively. It's going to be tough. But the key is for Arkansas, can they hold down Kansas State offensively so it doesn't become a track meet, which is a different form of a track meet. And I'll give my parallel for you, Harvey. Look at the Rose Bowl and look at how the offenses were run for both teams. Yet you would think Wisconsin would want to play slower.
That's right.
And keep the score limited with how they run offense.
That's right.
Wisconsin now have just 40 points a game. They're balanced. You know, they throw it when they're able to. They run the heck out of it. And Oregon, if we know Oregon is fast. That game came down to, you know, one throw late in the ball game. Spikes it. If he doesn't spike and throws in the end zone, who knows what happens? So it looks like plotter versus rabbit. Sometimes that plotter has more going than you think. That's how I think this game's going to unfold on Friday night. So I know it's a long-winded answer to your question.
But it's great stuff.
To me, it's a little more complicated than just looking at them talent-wise. Because Kansas State talent-wise, you wouldn't put them on the field with very many people. But at the end of the year, they're 10-2, and they figured out ways to win.
On the way out, you know, there's a faction of folks here that want to put Coach Former back on the field and put the tube back in the toothpaste, so to speak. And, you know, doesn't Bill Snyder kind of show you that you can do that? You can go home again? I mean, he went back there after Prince. He got control of that deal. You've studied it. How have they been able to do that so quickly?
It's been interesting because you have to go back to the last 2 years of Bill Snyder's regime at Kansas State to get a definitive answer. Well, it's not even a definitive answer to really examine it, because what's happened is people have just forgotten those last 2 years now and gone, oh, that Bill Snyder never should have left. He's 9-14 his last 2 years at Kansas State. They were ready for him to go. Okay? So he steps away. Ron Prince comes in, one bowl game in the 3 years. It doesn't go well like they wanted it to. He has a first rounder in Josh Freeman who, you know, it just didn't translate for whatever reason. And they bring coach back to, you know, as he called it, to calm the waters. Well, he goes 6-6 the first year, 7-5 this year, 10-2. Maybe that stepping away can rejuvenate you. You know what I mean, Tony and Harvey? Maybe that stepping away gets a little more spring in your step. But as he was going out the door the first time, there wasn't this huge outcry that coach shouldn't step away. Now, if you're going to translate that to Coach Fulmer, maybe the same thing could happen. He's been away a little while. Maybe he's recharged his batteries. Maybe he's going to be ready to hit that recruiting trail the way he hit it when he and his staff hit it when Tennessee was kicking butt. Maybe, maybe, maybe. All those things could very well be true. That's what Bill Snyder has taught us. But you got to be a grinder to go back and do that. And Bill Snyder got to get he never stopped being a grinder, but for whatever reason, it wasn't working the first time. Now it's working again, and all you can do is step back and applaud because no one's going to outwork the guy. That's for sure. But you still have to ask the question: what was going on the first time out the door? Because 9-14, and no one was sitting there saying, "Hey, keep coach, please." Now, of course, he's the savior because they realized what they replaced him with wasn't him, and for whatever reason, he was ready to go at it again the way he did before. Maybe Coach Fulmer would be in the same spot. Who knows? But to me, that's all speculation. I'm one of those guys that just wants to support the guy that's in the chair right now and have him have every opportunity to go make this thing work because that's where I am with Derek Dooley. I want that to happen. I want him to be a huge success at the University of Tennessee and not have us just sit there and long for other people. I wish him luck in that mission, and obviously I'm going to support him because he's the head coach of my school.
Hey, I really appreciate your time, Charles. Thank you. Great talking with you.
Thank you. It's nice chatting with you guys as always. Hello to everyone in Knoxville. Hello to Mama. And hopefully we'll chat in the not too distant future. And I hope you guys just go ahead and dominate 2012. Okay.
Continued success, man. Take care.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye bye.
Thank you, Charles. Charles Davis, one more time, wonderful ambassador for the University of Tennessee, calling the Cotton Bowl, Arkansas, Kansas State, Friday night. And the question is, why isn't the national championship game taking place Friday night when everybody could watch it? All the kids, everybody. No, it's got to drag it out till next Monday.